Hi everyone and welcome to the 63rd episode of Praticamente Inglese. I hope you're doing well, guys. Hope you had a great weekend. Today, a great interview is coming. I will interview Michael Flynn. He is from Dublin and he leads the Dublin Airport's Innovation Hub. So it's a very interesting interview. I will switch straight away in Italian as we will have a very long interview in English. Ciao a tutti ragazzi, bentornati, 63esimo episodio. Fra pochissimo intervisterò Michael Flynn, lui è di Dublino e quindi molto importante perché l'accento irlandese è leggermente diverso e questa cosa è molto importante penso per tutti quelli che ascolteranno rispetto a quello diciamo classico inglese londinese. E allo stesso tempo cercherò di chiedergli tante informazioni circa il futuro degli aeroporti, perché lui lavora all'aeroporto di Dublino e diciamo che gestisce tutto il settore legato all'innovazione. Quindi gli farò qualche domanda su questo, gli chiederò ovviamente di Dublino perché so che tante persone sono interessate a trasferirsi a Dublino, comunque vorrebbero avere più informazioni se Dublino è come Londra, quali sono le differenze e poi ovviamente gli chiederò le solite tre tips su come migliorare l'inglese e penso che ci darà degli spunti molto molto interessanti. Siccome lui non parla l'italiano, sarò io che diciamo ogni 10 minuti cercherò magari dopo ogni domanda di fare un piccolo recap in italiano. So, let's get started with today's episode and let me welcome to Praticamente Inglese, Mr. Michael Flynn. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Mattia. Really, really nice to meet you. And I'm looking forward to having a bit of a conversation with you today. Thanks for having me on.
I'm very, very happy because this podcast, Praticamente Inglese, is all about trying to help people, Italians mainly, to better understand and improve English. And I know that you are from Ireland, right?
Yes, absolutely. Born and bred in Ireland.
Okay. And you don't speak Italian at all, right?
No, unfortunately not. English perfectly, but no Italian.
Okay. But you have Italian friends.
Yes.
Okay, so that's very interesting because, you know, you can see, you can notice the struggling of Italians when they try to speak English, right?
yeah, definitely. So I won't criticize anybody, but I understand some of the good and some of the bad about how Italians, and not just Italians, other nationalities as well, but how they speak English and some of the things that do work and some of the things that really, really don't work either.
That's great because I will ask you at the end of the interview about as I usually do on the podcast, the three tips on how to improve English and practical things that we can do in order to improve. But before we start with the interview, I would like to ask you if you can introduce yourself to the audience. I know that you work in a very important airport in Europe, but tell us a little bit more about what you do and your experience, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. So I live in Dublin and I work in Dublin Airport, which obviously it's the main airport in Ireland. Ireland is a small island. There's a couple of other small airports, but it's the largest airport in Ireland. It's also one of the largest airports in Europe, particularly pre the COVID pandemic. It was one of the main airports in Europe. We would have had about maybe 32 to 33 million passengers every year. In 2019. Obviously, that's changed in the last few years, but we're looking to grow again and things are looking positive for the next summer. So that's good. My role in the airport is I run, we have an innovation hub, which we call the Future Factory, which is a fun name to have on it because we do focus on everything for the future of the airport and the future of aviation. So there's a couple of different things that we do there. We have a very, very small team, but we have a really, really big ambition, I suppose. And we really look at what's happening in the next kind of 5 to 10 years of the airport, what's happening in the next 5 to 10 years of aviation, and what are the trends, what are the developments, what are the changes, what are the changing expectations of our customers and our passengers that we need to be able to cater for. So we do a couple of little things where we develop new products and new services, and we trial them in the airport. So to give you an example, we recently just finished a trial where we had a cashierless store. So you might be familiar, or your listeners might be familiar, with the concept of the Amazon Go store. I'm not sure, there's probably supermarkets and things in Italy trying the same, where you walk in, you don't take out your wallet, you don't take out your purse, you don't meet anybody, you just do all of your shopping, come back out, and it's charged automatically. So that's a kind of a new trend that we're seeing. And we trialed that in a small version in Dublin Airport, which worked very, very well. And hopefully
let me ask you something. I'm very curious, because I know that Dublin is, is a great place for everything that is related to technology. I know that in Dublin, there's a lot of headquarters of, big tech companies, right? Like Google and so many other big companies. Do you notice, so many people that are working in the industry, of course, is giving you also inspirations, let's say, and you have to be on top of all those new trends as well, because it's just the city itself that is kind of, how can I say, is the image of high tech and new technologies in Europe, right?
It's a real, Dublin is an absolute international technology hub. We definitely see that the skills that are in the city and the experiences that are in the city through the companies like Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, Amazon, are definitely of benefit to us. But there's two kind of, one interesting thing actually that we find is, because those companies are so competitive and they have so many workers for them, we sometimes struggle to get the skills that we might need, because we're competing with them almost in a way. The other interesting thing is that a lot of our customers, a lot of people who fly regularly, who work for those sorts of companies, like your Gen Z passengers, your millennial passengers, they have a very different expectation than your older passengers or kind of holiday passengers. And we have to, as an airport, make sure that we cater for them. So people who want to work on the go, who want to have things very quick and very efficient and very seamless, we have to cater for those passengers. But the other real benefit that we see in Dublin from that is it sparks thought and creativity around the city. So the universities and colleges in Dublin have a really, really good culture of developing new research and developing small startup companies in the technology space. And that's actually what's really, really interesting for us in Dublin Airport. What are the new startup companies doing? What are the new technologies doing that are coming out that might help us as an airport? So an example actually of that is there's one of the universities is doing research on carbon capture technology, which sustainability and carbon emissions is huge for everybody in airports.
Yeah, it's a big trend.
Yeah. But there's really, really exciting and interesting things happening in that technology. And one of the universities in Dublin is doing a lot of work on that as well. And we're working with them on that as well to understand how that can benefit airports as well. So the whole kind of creation of a technology and development ecosystem in Dublin is a massive, massive benefit to us.
I would do a recap in Italian, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Because as I always say, of course, it's important for people to listen to people that are talking perfect English, let's say, but at the same time to understand the context of what we are talking, because it's not easy for everybody. So I will quickly switch in Italian, and then we'll get back to English.
And maybe I can learn a few words of Italian through this as well.
Okay, yeah, it's true. You can definitely learn and listen to Italian too. It's a good opportunity. Yeah. Michael ovviamente lavora all'aeroporto di Dublino, e la cosa molto interessante di Michael è che ovviamente fa parte di un team che cerca di innovare. Lab è un aeroporto molto importante, 33-34 milioni di persone viaggiano ogni anno, ovviamente è un dato di pre-pandemia, e siccome gli ho chiesto anche questa cosa del fatto che Dublino comunque è una città dove ci sono tanti headquarter, tanti quartier generali di compagnie tech molto importanti, Google, Amazon, eccetera, e quindi anche il contesto generale della città spinge all'innovazione. Parlava ovviamente Michael di università che sono molto, diciamo, fanno ricerche molto legate allo spazio, all'area legata alla tecnologia, e lui stesso insieme al suo team sta implementando tutta una serie di novità all'interno dell'aeroporto perché, come diceva lui, i millennials, le persone, i giovani si aspettano, soprattutto perché sono abituati a vivere in questo contesto tech, a vedere anche servizi molto legati. E un esempio che portava era quella di Amazon Go, che è questo store dove le persone entrano, prendono i prodotti, acquistano i prodotti, li mettono nel carrello e se ne vanno senza dover passare dalla cassa. Tutto viene automaticamente addebitato sulla carta di credito. La tecnologia che c'è dietro, adesso non stiamo lì a guardarla nel dettaglio, però insomma il concetto molto interessante era per me a vedere un pochino i nuovi trend nella parte legata all'aviazione in generale, l'aviazione civile in questo caso, e tutto quello che un aeroporto può fare e tutte le nuove tecnologie che possono essere implementate all'interno, e questo ne era, diciamo, un esempio. So, my recap is over. I was just saying to everybody, you know, how important is your role and your team's role of innovation in a hub like Dublin, which is very important in general in Europe, in Ireland, of course, but in general, because Dublin represents a tech city, let's say, with all those big companies sitting there with their headquarters. So you are surrounded by those kind of people, and you need to deliver this kind of service to them. I don't know if you were talking about like the shop like Amazon Go that you get in, and you don't go to a cashier. You just you just receive the sum you paid. You just pick products and then you go out, and that's something very, very nice, I would say, interesting. What else? There's other trends related to airports or services in the airport that you could tell us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that whole idea of the Amazon Go store kind of fits into, or the cashierless store fits into, the kind of concept of a more personalized service. So the idea of personalization is huge, and it's in airports, but it's everywhere. So anything that can make the experience more personal, you'd see as well things like when you want to buy food and beverage, you know, buy a sandwich or a drink in the airport, not having to go to a specific shop, but maybe going to your gate and having it delivered to you. So having the services in the airport delivered to you and making the service in the airport more personalized. That's one really, really big theme. But some of the other interesting ones are, and I'm sure your listeners will be familiar with these as well, particularly ones who travel, but digital enhancement of the whole airport and airline and flying experience is huge, particularly things like biometric travel. So we're all used to flying and having to either, you know, save our boarding card on our phone or get the boarding card printed out. But travel is now moving towards where you shouldn't have to, you know, have a concept of a boarding card, that you're biometric. So either your fingerprint or a scan of your iris or your retina in your eye is the best sort of an identification. It's much, much safer as well, because, you know, I can print a boarding card and give it to you, Mattia, and you can travel, but I can't pretend I have your fingerprint or your eye. So that sort of digital and biometric travel, where you use your own biometric identifiers to travel.
I should say as well that this is like great, no? The fact that the innovation, there's also an issue on the other side from my perspective, but which I think you are working on as well, that is the data protection.
Yeah.
Because of course, when you have my fingerprint, you need to protect that data. So you need to provide high level of security as well, in order, because then of course could be dangerous for people if my personal data, there's a data breach, let's say, or things like that. So I would assume that you are trying to compensate what I could be an innovation and to make things easier for everybody, and you know, security as well, but at the same time, the security of the data, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, everybody who lives and works in Europe has heard of and knows of the GDPR legislation, which absolutely protects. I mean, we probably have the most protective data regulations in the whole world, you know, in Europe, and we absolutely have to work within those. And I think the question of data kind of is really, really good, because we have to protect everybody's individual data, but we also have to then make people trust in the process. So I often think it's the very same as like internet banking when that started coming. You know, nobody trusted it. Everybody thought it's not the way, but over time, people built up trust and saw that it was safe, it was secure, and it benefited them. And it's the exact same principle. If we're doing new things, it has to be safe, it has to be secure from a data point of view, but also from a process point of view, but also to help people. And when people can trust in those three things, they'll start to adopt it and get on board with it. But already, I mean, that concept of biometric travel, GDPR and data is a really appropriate thing now as well, because at the moment, between airports and airlines, an airline will collect certain information on you, and like your name, your passport details, because you need it to buy the ticket. As an airport, we never see that because we have no reason to need it. So if we don't need the data, we don't get the data. And that's the legislation, that's the law. So that makes it challenging as well when you're trying to develop the new products and new services, and because there are limitations that come in, and aviation is such a regulated industry as well, that one of the biggest challenges of my role is being able to do things within the legislation and things like GDPR. So it's an interesting thing. And I think a lot of the technology is actually there to do these new things, but a lot of the safety and security of legislation is a bit more behind, so that has to kind of catch up with the technology. So it's a very interesting debate you could have. But
let me say something in Italian. Let me do a quick recap in Italian as well, because it's very important what you said. And you know, our conversation, giustamente Michael diceva, l'innovazione, sicuramente i trend del futuro saranno quelli del viaggio biometrico, cioè nel senso, se oggi noi abbiamo la nostra boarding card o abbiamo i nostri dati, tipo documenti e cose di questo genere per accedere al lab, più andiamo avanti e più queste cose diciamo scompariranno in favore di impronte digitali o riconoscimento della diciamo della retina e cose di questo genere, quindi riconoscimento facciale eccetera, e mentre lui diceva questo io dicevo ok, però è anche importante la sicurezza di questi dati, perché è vero che ci facilita la vita e ci rende anche più sicuri, perché ovviamente uno può falsificare un documento, può falsificare come dire un biglietto, ma di certo non può falsificare la propria impronta digitale. Però allo stesso tempo avere questi dati biometrici da parte di diciamo in questo caso l'aeroporto o le compagnie aeree portano al fatto che devono innalzare pesantemente la sicurezza di questi dati affinché questi dati non vengano persi, ecco. So la cosa importante giustamente che faceva notare Michael è che anche le banche, quando è iniziato il home banking, quando è iniziato tutto quello che era legato a entro in banca soltanto dall'app e cose di questo genere, all'inizio era visto come un pericolo, come qualcosa che poteva non essere, come poteva essere pericolosa, no? E le persone non si fidavano, e poi man mano ci si è resi conto che la sicurezza si è elevata, e così si è arrivato anche il servizio e il risparmio del nostro tempo nella gestione delle operazioni bancarie. So I was just doing a recap about what we said. I'm more struggling right now with Italian than in English, because I switch in between the two languages, you know, and sometimes it's very difficult. But in general, it's great, because you are talking about future things that could happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm very looking forward to, you know, to those kind of things, because it's going to be easier for everybody to travel. And And I know as well that a big thing related to aviation is the fact that English is the standard worldwide. Yeah. No, so we know a lot of terms related to aviation that we use in Italian as well. Now I was talking about, you know, boarding card is biglietto in Italian, but we don't call it anymore. Or like, for example, now the certification of the vaccination, which is the green pass.
Yes.
It's not like, we don't say certificato verde. Yes, we say that, but in general, we tend to use English terms and terminology. Can you just explain me a few of those terms that you think are important, but at the same time, you listen over and over again, and this is standard everywhere?
Yeah, it's interesting as well that that English is the universal language of aviation, because it means that it actually becomes a really, really small world. Like, I speak a lot to colleagues who work in aviation in other airports around Europe and around the world, and it's actually very, very easy for me to do so because we share the same language. And actually, recently I spoke to a peer colleague in Rome Airport about what they're doing, and they're doing really exciting things actually in the innovation space. But we had the exact same language. Now, maybe his actual English wasn't 100% perfect, but we could communicate perfectly, so it's great. And on the terms that are very, I suppose, are very universal in English, you know, things like boarding card or passport or immigration or, you know, kind of security, check-in, boarding, those sorts of words, I think, are probably a little bit, depending on what country you're in, might use the native language or might use the English language. But when it gets very, very specific is when it's regulated. So anybody who works as a pilot, anybody who works as an air traffic controller, anybody who works as a flight attendant or cabin crew, all of the language that they have to use it's quite regulated because it's for safety and security, but it's also so that wherever you are in the world, it can be understood. And the interesting thing is aviation always goes for abbreviations. So it makes it so difficult, even for a native English speaker, because everything is shortened. So like if we're talking about passengers in our airport, we often won't say passenger, we'll say PAX. So P-A-X for a passenger, or we'll shorten down. So we would do a lot of work for passengers who have reduced mobility, which is basically any passenger who has an additional need. They might be disabled, they might have problems walking, they might be autistic, they might have dementia, they might be elderly. But instead of saying a passenger with additional need, we say a passenger with reduced mobility, and then we make it more difficult and we say a PRM. So everything is always, always, always shortened down. Another interesting one is out on the airfield where all the aircraft are. It's a very, very regulated area. Everything has to be safe and secure. If ever anybody like drops something, so if you're boarding your flight and something falls out of your bag or your purse or something like that, it has to be cleaned up straight away, because if it blows into the engines, it's a safety issue. We call that FOD, which makes no sense, but it's foreign object debris. Yeah, FOD, F-O-D. And it's foreign object debris. So things like that can often be for people who start working in aviation, who don't have the experience. It's very, very, it takes some time to kind of get used to the language, understand what the words mean, understand what the terms mean. And then it makes it even more complicated if you do go into, like I said, a pilot or a cabin crew, because everything there is even shortened. So every airport is given a code. So instead of calling Dublin, we call it Dub, D-U-B. Malpensa Airport.
MXP, right?
MXP, exactly, okay.
So there's, quello che sta cercando di dire Michael, che tutto nel mondo dell'aviazione diventa un'abbreviazione, e dal nome dell'aeroporto, che spesso vedete sui vostri bagagli, che sono normalmente tre lettere, viene identificato con tre lettere, a quelli che sono altre terminologie per poter parlare di riduzione di mobilità di alcune persone, no? Che noi magari possiamo chiamare disabili o diversamente abili, insomma ognuno ha il suo modo per poter identificare determinate situazioni, oppure, come diceva prima, legato al bagaglio perso o cose di questo genere. Quindi tutto in aviazione diventa un'abbreviazione. Everything is an abbreviation, let's say. Become an abbreviation in aviation, right?
Yeah, an abbreviation or even a code then. And one last example, our national airline is Aer Lingus. It's the biggest airline. Well, actually, it's the second biggest airline in Ireland after Ryanair, but it's our national airline and kind of carries our colour and our flag. And every airline has to call themselves a name when they're talking to air traffic control, which has to be different than their airline name. I don't understand why, but they have to do it. So for Aer Lingus, if they're talking over air traffic control, they will call themselves Shamrock, which is the Irish national emblem, the shamrock, the three-leaf clover. So even things like that, it's just, it's made more complicated. So
do you know about our Italian airline, which is it used to be Alitalia?
Alitalia, yeah.
And now it's called ITA. I don't know if you know that
they changed, they
rebranded as ITA Airways, and which was the name for the previous one, Alitalia? Do you know?
I actually don't know. No.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Because
I'll find out and I'll come back to you.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Because we rebranded our national airline. Alitalia in ITA Airways, and I mean, I was very curious to know about those abbreviations as well, because as you it's something that I noticed in English, there's a lot of abbreviations in general. Mm-hmm. I was talking about, you know, when you write an email, you know, from my point of view, on my perspective, or as soon as possible, or things like TGIF, thanks God it's Friday.
Yeah.
You know, things like that, and everything is an abbreviation. So it's very common in general in the English language, but in aviation even more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and like I said, sometimes it makes it difficult even for a native English speaker, because a new thing will come up, something, you know, something will change or something new will come up, and it's not always obvious as to what it is. Like, we all know TGIF is, thank God it's Friday. But if you had never read that before, you probably would struggle. Or I received an email recently and somebody signed it at the bottom, instead of saying best regards, which would be common, you know, to sign off the email, they put BRGDS. So just short, and took a couple of letters. I didn't understand it at all. I didn't know. But it's very, very common in English. And part of it is laziness, but part of it also is convenience.
Yeah, but for example, as well, if I always notice this as well, you know, if we, as Italian, we need to write an email and we need to say something to our colleague or our boss, we tend to write an email with, I don't know, in 6, 7, 8 rows, you know, lines. You know, if you are a British guy, you would say exactly the same things, maybe in 2 rows, in 2 lines.
Yeah.
You know, it's different as well. You know, the culture and the information and the communication. We are more formal, let's say, and you are more informal, even in business. And this is a big thing, and it's easier. And also, things are very fast in general. So I just say, okay, let's do it. In Italy, we'd say, due to the fact that da 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 da, I would suggest then da 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 da, and so we can. So it's very long for us, you know, the communication.
Yeah.
For you, it's like, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, exactly. But that's an interesting point about the difference between the English language and a lot of other languages, particularly Latin-based languages. We do have a more formal versions of English, but it's not the same as when, I know in Italian and in Spanish, it's the same, depending on how well you know somebody. There's a rule as to what formal language that you do use. If you're addressing like the different verb forms that you'll use. We don't have that in English. So very often if somebody who's a non-native speaker does write an email or even speak to somebody face-to-face, they use the more formal versions of English because it's what they're used to or they're being polite. But actually it can sometimes sound very, very unnatural. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges for people when they move to an English speaking country or are working with people who are native English speakers is to make themselves sound that bit more natural by just kind of getting used to what the language that we use day to day, which doesn't always follow a rule, which is what makes it more difficult. But that more colloquial language that we use on a day to day basis, I think it's a challenge.
So, for example, I experienced London as a city where I lived for a few years. What about Dublin? If an Italian wants to move to Dublin, would you say that, I don't know, rent is expensive, or what would you say? What would you recommend to someone, an Italian that wants to move to Dublin? I think in general, as you mentioned as well before, there's a lot of companies related to tech. And so if you have a background of tech or you want to, maybe you work in a startup world, let's say, there's a lot of opportunity there. So I would say if you move to Dublin, usually you should already have a job or something like that, maybe. But what about if I want to move to Dublin, like I did in London, and I want to start working as, I don't know, a receptionist in a hotel or a waiter in a restaurant? How is the situation and how is the balance between the salary, the wage, and you know, the cost of living, let's say?
Yeah, I think Dublin is similar to a lot of places right now that we have a really serious housing crisis. So, and that's all of Ireland. We've too few houses and too many people need houses. So that means the price of buying a house and the price of renting is very, very high at the moment. And it's continuing to increase and it's a big problem. So that's probably one of the biggest challenges if an Italian was considering coming to Dublin. Apart from that, the jobs market is fantastic at the moment. And that's for, like you say, is people working in tech, people working in finance. It's very, very good. People working in construction. It's very, very good. People working in retail. It's very, very good. And hospitality and tourism is coming back now after COVID and is coming back very, very strongly. So the jobs market is fantastic and it's very, very easy to find a job. And both if your English is very, very good, it's a big advantage. But even if your English is not so good, the jobs market is still very, very good, particularly hotel, hospitality, tourism. It's a great opportunity to get working in the English language and also to work with. There's a lot of, like, we have a very big Brazilian community in Ireland. We have a big Spanish community in Ireland, South America in general, a lot of Eastern Europeans. So there's a lot of different people with different sort of experiences of English, and that's good. So the jobs market is very good. Housing market, not so good. But then the cultural life in Dublin is really fantastic. And I know I live in Dublin, so I'm biased, but Dublin is one of the reasons I love Dublin is it's a small city, but it has everything that a big city has. So it's a very, very easy city to live in. You can walk most places. It's very easy to kind of to meet friends, go for a coffee, go to the theater, you know, do those sorts of things. It's a very, very vibrant sort of a city and a very, very easy city. You don't have to travel hours to get from one side to the other. So the day-to-day lifestyle in Dublin is really, really good.
Let me do a recap in Italian because this is very interesting for Italian people. Gli ho chiesto ovviamente a Michael com'è trasferirsi a Dublino. Gli dicevo, io ho avuto un'esperienza a Londra, ma in termini di costi e bilanciamento tra il costo della vita e gli stipendi, insomma, com'è, come non è. E lui mi diceva che a livello professionale ci sono tantissime opportunità. Quindi è molto simile a Londra, nel senso che si può trovare veramente tantissimi lavori, soprattutto in quel contesto tech, per cui diciamo Dublino è molto conosciuta, ma anche di finanza. Mentre invece per chi volesse partire senza, diciamo, un vero e proprio lavoro già contrattualizzato, anche la parte legata al turismo, all'hospitality, gli hotel, i ristoranti, insomma, ci sono possibilità di lavoro. L'unica cosa, il problema che c'era anche a Londra e che c'è ancora di più a Dublino, c'è una forte richiesta di case, e le case sono quelle che sono. Ci sono tante persone che si stanno trasferendo, negli ultimi anni si sono trasferiti a Dublino, e quindi ovviamente il prezzo delle case, sia in termini di costo di acquisto sia in termini di affitto, sono molto elevati, quindi diciamo c'è un problema. L'altra cosa bella però di Dublino, oltre alla parte professionale, è anche quella di vivibilità della città, perché è una città piccolina tra virgolette, ma che ha esattamente tutto quello che avrebbe una grande capitale europea, e quindi diciamo anche il vivere comune, il diciamo l'uscire, andare a teatro, andare al cinema, passeggiare, insomma c'è tutto quello che ci sarebbe in una più blasonata e grande città, insomma, ecco. Okay, that's great, because now, you know, people are, you know, it's very difficult now, for example, to move to London because of Brexit, no?
Yeah.
So I assume that there's a lot of people that they moved from London to Frankfurt, to Paris, and to Dublin as well. You mentioned before about finance. I think it's an industry, the finance industry is like one of those that, you know, are, you know, they had to move away from London. Yeah. And so I would say that it's an English speaking country, Ireland. So it's very beneficial, this, for a lot of company, I would say, no? So maybe you had... Yeah. This increase of people after Brexit, I don't know if this is thus possible.
Yeah, no, absolutely we did. And we saw some kind of finance institutions, particularly a couple of American banks that would have had their European headquarters in London, move them. Some of them moved to Frankfurt, as you said, some of them moved to Paris, but we did get some moving to Dublin as well. And we did see an increase in people emigrating to Ireland because of the opportunities that we benefited from Brexit. We're the only native English speaking country in the EU now, so that does give us benefits to that as well. It's also interesting then when you have people who are used to speaking British English coming to Ireland. There's some colloquialisms and some things we say that are kind of different. The accent is different is one thing, but our turn of phrase or how we say things can sometimes be different. And to give you an example, people who come to Ireland for the first time often get a bit confused, because when Irish people are saying hello, very often they'll say, how's it going? And it sounds like we're saying, like, how's it going or how are you? So people often will answer and say, oh, I'm good, or no, I'm whatever. But actually, that's just our turn of phrase. Irish people, how's it going is hello. We're not necessarily inquiring.
you don't need a reply.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's not a bad thing if you do reply, but it's strange. And Irish people will react to that a little bit confused, as to thinking, why are you answering me? I just said hello. But little kind of colloquialisms or expressions like that, it takes a bit of getting used to as well, because sì, it is a bit.
Diceva giustamente Michael, il come va, no? Non è perché io voglio realmente una risposta da te, è come per dire ciao, la stessa cosa, how's it going? È più una risposta hello, ciao, sto rispondendo al ciao e fine, non devi ulteriormente dirmi ah tutto bene, come sta, sto bene, grazie o cose di questo genere, è semplicemente una parte che fa parte, diciamo, del salutarsi, ecco. Ok, but you work in an airport, so I would assume that you had experiences in meeting with people from all over the world and communicating in English. I don't know if you have something to share with us before I will ask you, of course, about the three tips on how to, from your perspective, could be good for us to improve English. But if you had any sort of, you know, experience with people from all over the world that you would like to share with us.
Yeah, I've some interesting. I travel quite a lot, and I like to travel. I like to travel to more unusual countries or a little bit off the beaten track, not to mainstream places. So I've had lots of experiences of meeting people in different situations where their English would be very, very poor, and my native language of wherever they're from would be non-existent. And I'm often struck. I think it's really interesting when you see how creative we can get when trying to communicate in totally different languages. So it's not so much relevant for the business world, but two particularly interesting ones I had were, one, I was in in Mongolia a couple of years ago, and I was staying with a nomad family who lived off the land. They spoke no English whatsoever. I spoke no Mongolian whatsoever. So there was a translator who was with us who helped translate, but she wasn't there all of the time. And when we in the evening time, when the translator wasn't there, we couldn't communicate. But what we decided to do was we took turns in singing local songs. So they would sing a Mongolian song and I would sing an Irish song, and my friend who was with me would sing an Irish song. Now, we didn't fully understand each other, but you know, like through different mediums, like a song or the emotion of a song or the tone of a song, you kind of get a sense of the person as well. And I definitely felt that I understood them as people a little bit more than I did previously. And I just thought that was a really kind of creative way of engaging with a person.
Yeah, because music is universal, no? Music is kind of universal.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you always have, I mean, we're lucky in the age that we live in, that we have technology to help us with pretty much whatever we want. And like Google Translate or Babbel or all of those different translation tools and things like that can be so, so beneficial. I was traveling, I traveled the Trans-Siberian railroad a couple of years ago between Moscow and Beijing. And when I was in Siberia, I met a guy, and it was on a small island, actually, in a lake called Lake Baikal, and met a guy. He was Russian. He was absolutely crazy. He told me he was Vladimir Putin's personal physician. I don't believe him, but that's what he told me. But we had a whole conversation over a beer and some food for probably 2 hours. And it was a mixture of broken English. I had learned a couple of words of Russian, but it was like, hello, thank you. It was nothing special. And Google Translate. And we had an absolutely wonderful engaging conversation. And I could actually see through that about 2 hours of conversation, his English slightly improving, because it was just the competence, and he was picking up on words that I was speaking or remembering words that he hadn't used in a few years. So that competence of talking, but it was enabled by Google Translate.
Yeah, you're 100%. Raising a great point, because I always say to my audience that the very important thing is about to practice English. No, it's sometimes difficult to do so. I, for example, I've created a room on Clubhouse. I usually do this room. I run this room every Friday, and I say to my audience, hey guys, let's have a chat. Doesn't really matter the level of your English. The fact that you speak, the fact that you open your mouth, you try to say something in English, will give you a boost. And as exactly as you said, know that this guy from Russia, he was trying to communicate with you in English, and in 2 hours conversation, even that's struggling there, he may be improved, because he was noticing from your English as well. So he was kind of raising his level as well too. So I think it's very important. And this will bring me to the last question, which is, do you have tips for us? Because I know you have Italian friends, because I received, this is like very nice, because I received a DM on LinkedIn about Roberto, which is a friend, but he's also a listener of the podcast Praticamente Inglese, and he introduced me to you, saying, hey, you should interview Michael. He's from Dublin. He works in the airport. He has so many things to share. He's a great person. And that's, you know, huge, because I met you this morning, for the first time. And we are talking since 45 minutes, and you know, that's great, because we are having a conversation. You're saying so many valuable things to Italians listening right now that are maybe struggling with English. They want to improve English because they need it for work, or there's so many other things because they want to improve English. But so this will bring me to my last question. If you have 3 tips on how to improve English, or maybe things that you have noticed because you have Italian friends.
Yeah. Well, actually, one of my tips is because of Roberto, who introduced us. When I would often talk with Roberto, and if he would make mistakes or maybe use a wrong term or something, I might feel a bit embarrassed to correct him, because I don't want to make him feel bad. And he always says to me, no, tell me, correct me. If I make a mistake, please, please tell me. And I think that's one really important thing, is when you have the opportunity to speak English with a native English speaker, tell them to correct you. Tell them that you want to know you know, what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. Because very often I feel bad if if you make a small mistake, I'll feel bad saying, oh, actually, sorry, it's a little bit different than that. We don't say you, we say they, you know. So tell people that you are absolutely open to correction and
let
want
me
to be corrected.
Let me straight away translate this in Italian because it's so important. Giustamente Michael dice, se avete la possibilità di parlare con una persona madrelingua che conosce bene o che conosce molto bene l'inglese, chiedetegli di correggervi, chiedetegli di farvi notare quali sono gli errori mentre parlate, perché le persone davanti a voi, magari per una questione proprio di correttezza, magari dicono no, ma è meglio che non, tanto ho capito il concetto di quello che sta dicendo, è inutile che lo corregga. Invece chiedetegli di correggervi, perché è importante, vi eleva automaticamente la vostra pratica e la possibilità di potervi esprimere correttamente in inglese. Ok, let's go with the second tip.
Ok, so that's the first one. Second one is... it's nothing new. It's, as you said, it is take every single opportunity to speak to a native English speaker as much as possible. And I would say that is so, so much more important than grammar, than vocabulary, than studying, than anything else. I lived in Spain for a little while and I learned a bit of Spanish purely through speaking to people. I never studied it. So speak to people as much as possible. You know, there are so many websites that have language exchanges of people who want to learn Italian, where you can speak a bit of Italian to them and you speak English, or they speak English with you and you learn it. So speak it at every single available opportunity. And after you've spoken it, then worry about whether you have the grammar, the vocabulary, the everything about that. So
ok, so il secondo consiglio di Michael è quello legato a se avete la possibilità e cercate la possibilità di parlare con qualcuno inglese, potrebbe essere anche uno scambio alla pari di qualcuno che parla inglese e che vuole imparare l'italiano, no? Cercare in tutti i modi di trovare l'occasione di parlare, di colloquiare, di praticare l'inglese veramente, non tanto la grammatica. È ovvio che la grammatica, lo studio della lingua è importante a prescindere, e questo è ovvio, però giustamente in un contesto in cui io voglio imparare l'inglese perché ho bisogno dell'inglese per comunicare sia al lavoro o per altre ragioni personali, la prima cosa, la cosa più importante è quella di provare a parlarlo il più possibile, trovare qualcuno alla pari, trovare un tutor, trovare qualcuno con cui poter parlare inglese. Questa è una cosa fondamentale per ovviamente migliorare e poter comunicare. Let me add something. I would say this in English. Mm-hmm. We, you know, my podcast is called Praticamente, which means practically in Italian, because I was starting from exactly your point when I started this podcast. I was saying, okay, we all know English because we study in English at school, you know, from elementary school, you start 1 hour a week is very bad in Italy, the situation with education of English. In fact, if you go to, if you want to listen to a guy, 18 years old guy, that's, you know, I say, come on, you just did 13 years, you studied English for 13 years. It's kind of impossible that you're not able to speak. And this is the situation, unfortunately, in Italy, no? And then I always say to everybody, in Italy, we had always an actor, a voiceover, translating English, all the movies we have, everything is translated in Italian. So we don't really know. We never listened to English properly unless you were at school. So we did so many years of grammar, of studying, and we don't know how to speak English at the end of the day. Now let's kind of do the reverse. Let's try to speak English without knowing about grammar, trying to communicate with someone, trying to raise the awareness and how can you improve, not thinking about grammar, not thinking about studying verbs or idioms or things like that, trying just to speak. And you describe what I always said to my audience and the reason why I'm creating this podcast, Kai. Okay, if you want to study English, you can do it whatever you want. You can find a tutor, you can, you can buy hours with the teacher, or you can study on a book, you can buy a book and do things. That's fine. Here in this podcast, just listen to me, not me, myself, because I'm not a teacher myself, but my audience, because usually my guests, because my guests usually, they know very well English, the people that I tend to to interview and maybe repeat in your car, because mainly the audience of Praticamente Inglese, mainly they listen to English maybe in the car.
Yes, yeah.
While commuting to work. So you are alone in the car. Try to repeat a word, a sentence or something, and this will help you to be more confident with
exactly,
English. So thank you very much for that, because you know this is one of the main thing that is changing. It's a game changer.
Yeah,
practicing English.
Yeah, but it really is. And I mean, the best way, all the research shows that the best way to learn any language actually is by immersion in the language, because you can learn, like, grammar is a logical thing. If you're good at science, you can learn grammar, but it doesn't mean you can speak a language. So it really is, immersion in a language is the best way to learn any language. And, you know, I think I already did a bit of a sales pitch for Dublin, but Dublin is a great city to live in, and come over to Dublin and spend some time there, because different accents as well are so important. Mm-hmm. If you spend all of your time listening to one person or one type of accent, you'll struggle straight away when you listen to somebody else. So that immersion by hearing different languages really is the absolute best way to learn any language.
So what about the third tip?
The third is, again, very, very basic, but I think it really, really works. Read newspapers in English. So look at some Irish newspapers. The Irish Times or the Irish Independent are good. Some of the British newspapers or the American newspapers, the New York Times or things like that. And the reason I suggest that is because if you're reading the news, you're going to understand a lot about what's going on anyway. So if you're reading an English article about the war currently in Ukraine, you know the language in Italian, you know what's happening. So you're going to get a lot of the meaning and pick up a lot of the newer words. And it's much better than, let's say, watching a movie with subtitles, because the subtitles distract you. You don't actually pick it up. Whereas reading it, you're improving your reading of English and you're already understanding a lot of the different words. And you have a mental reference to make because you understand what the news topic is. And it's so easy nowadays because you can get all the newspapers online.
Lo faccio subito in italiano. Il terzo consiglio di Michael, mi sembra molto giusto, è quello di dire, al posto di prediligere il film con i sottotitoli che scompaiono, prendete un giornale, un quotidiano inglese, irlandese, americano, dove potete leggere una notizia che magari è qualcosa in cui siete interessati, e quindi in qualche modo cercare di praticare l'inglese leggendo le notizie in inglese, andando su un sito internet magari di una rivista o di un quotidiano inglese, e cercare di leggere e quindi riuscire ad assimilare meglio le parole inglesi e quindi migliorarlo piano piano e aumentare sempre di più la quantità di vocabolario a nostra disposizione. That's fantastic. Three great tips, Michael, and thank you very much. What I usually say to my guest at the end is like, where can we find you? If someone wants to connect with you, if you want to share, I don't know, your profile or something related to, you know, a place where usually you are in online, let's say.
Yeah, well, if you come to Dublin, look me up and you can find me in Dublin. But to find me online...
At the airport, of sure.
Yeah,
I will
exactly.
In Dublin, yeah. I will find you because you work at the airport. Now.
Yeah, just ask somebody, do they know Michael Flynn? And they'll point you my direction. But no, seriously, if anybody wants to look me up, I'm on LinkedIn. If you search Michael Flynn Dublin Airport, you'll get me there. And I'm more than happy to connect or chat with anybody. So please do look me up there on LinkedIn.
That's great. Thank you very much for your time, Michael. And I think this was a valuable interview for a lot of listeners. I mean, because we talk about aviation, we talk about new trends, we talked about, you know, moving in Dublin, which is a great European city, and everything related to, you know, on how to improve English, the tips, the final tips on how to improve English. So it was a great interview. I would say to all my audience, to follow Praticamente Inglese on your podcast platforms. Of course, you can follow Praticamente Inglese on all different social media and everything. We usually have this this appointment, this meeting every Friday at 1 p.m. So if you have the opportunity, it's lunchtime. So it's Lunch Break with Italians, the name of the room. and so I look forward to have a chat with you there. This is the open opportunity to practice English, what we just said right now. I wish you a great week ahead, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye, Michael.
Bye, Mattia. Thank you.